right. Welcome to the last show of 2016.
Bum, bum, bum.
Happy holidays. Neil Rosen here with Bill Bregoli.
Hi.
And Bill McCuddy.
Merry Christmas. Don't kill Christmas, Neil.
And happy Hanukkah.
Happy right. Hanukkah.
So,
and Kwanzaa
some,
and whatever else.
We're talking about some, excuse me, some really big movies that
Neil's
are opening
a little
this
verklempt.
Week. We're talking about Fences. We're talking about Hidden Figures. We're talking about the new Martin Scorsese movie, Silence. And we're talking a movie called Patterson. And we'll talk about some other stuff,
Get off
too.
The bus, Gus.
Which one do you want to talk about first? You want to talk about Silence
What do you
first?
Think? Yeah, I think Silence is probably the headline here because Martin Scorsese for 30-some years has tried to get this absolute piece of...
crap?
Well, I call it an unwatchable masterpiece.
What do you call it, Bill Bregoli?
Long.
I call it boring.
Almost 3 hours. I have a friend who saw the 3 hour and 54 minute version because he's friends with Thelma, the editor. And
Thelma
then he came back.
Schoonmaker.
Spoonmakers. Hi, Thelma. Little shout out for you. He said he couldn't tell the difference between the 2 hour and 45 minute version and the 3 hour and 54 minute version.
Because it's the same movie.
It's 3 hours of torture, which basically is what it is.
Well, why don't you tell us what it's about?
It's two Jesuit priests go in the 17th century, go to Japan, where they don't like Christianity. Those nutty Christians, they're not happy with
they
that.
They like Buddhism.
They like Buddhism, and they won't, in a very un-Buddhistic way, don't accept other people's religions. So,
well, the government feels threatened by Christianity.
Yeah, but the Christians have their order to go and try and spread Christianity throughout the world. Liam Neeson got there before these two guys, played by Adam Driver and Andrew Garfield. And so Garfield and Driver go looking for Neeson. They hear rumors that he's defected. He's turned over to the Japanese, and he's not Christian anymore. He's a Boo. So they go looking for their Boo.
He's gone to the dark side, which plays into his Star Wars role.
I have a certain set of skills, and none of them is Christianity. Anyway, they find that people who want to be Christians over there have to meet at midnight in kind of these ritualistic kind of dark corners. And many of the Japanese do want to be Christians, but the ones that do get their heads cut off. This is way before ISIS, and Scorsese spares no blood in this thing. It's a lot of torture scenes, and one very good performance, I think, by Andrew Garfield that I think will benefit his Hacksaw Ridge Oscar potential nomination.
What do you think, otherwise, Bill Bregoli?
You can't go see this thing.
Right. It's hard to watch. I actually took a 10-minute break and went off to just went to the sanctity of the men's
room. Well, the studios will be thrilled to hear that.
And said, I can't take any more of this torture. I got tired of it after
a
while.
I got the whole thing in 25 minutes. I mean, I understand. The Japanese government is threatened by Christianity. The two priests, Adam Driver and Andrew Garfield, they're just torturing Japanese people who are, you know, into Christianity in front of their faces until they cry uncle, until they say, okay, we're leaving, we're renouncing Christianity. In order to renounce Christianity, well, in this movie, they have to step on a metal plate with Jesus's image on it, and they have these scenes that go on throughout the entire movie where these Japanese people are going, just step on the plate, Ged, just step on the plate. And it's easy. You'll see. It's an easy thing to do. And then you'll be free. And all these conflicted Japanese people, they walk up to the plate and they can't step on the plate except for one guy who's this like, he keeps stepping on the plate, keeps coming free. Then he feels guilty and he runs back and he wants to give confession to like Andrew Garfield. And then Andrew Garfield gives him the confession and then he goes out and does something else that's really like underhanded.
He turns in Garfield again. It's the same movie over and over
again for close to 3 hours, and it's like 20 minutes of torture. Okay, are you ready? Are you ready to renounce Jesus? No. Okay, here we're going to roll out another 30 people that we're going to torture in front of you. We're going to burn them rolled up in haystacks. We're going to drown them. We're going to decapitate them. We're going to beat them. I mean, it's just, it is such a one-note thing that goes on and on. Is it filmed beautifully? Sure, it's gorgeous to look at. Do I care? If I want to look at beautiful stuff, I'll get a magazine with beautiful images in it.
I wish
I'll go
it was
online and look.
I wish
at
it was Monty Python
or Jesuit.
There's no humor
at all. Zero. Zippo.
Yeah.
Jesuit fellas would have been cool if he wanted to do like sort of a, you know.
Everybody's got a nickname here. Everybody's got a nickname. This is. This is Mikey Priest. Mikey Priest. We call him Mikey. because he's...
I thought Wang Tzu was a made man and they whacked him. You know, like, no, nothing like that.
Right,
so,
no, it's not a comedy.
Silence,
but,
no.
But it's just, it is torture to see.
Sorry, Marty. Next time.
I know. Talk about your vanity projects.
I have a feeling he owes them Paramount five gangster movies after they let him release
Look, this is the kind of movie where only a handful of people would have the clout to get this green-lighted. I mean, you know, Scorsese, Spielberg.
There's a favor. I swear he owes them a favor.
I don't know. Who else?
No,
who thought it might
be commercial because there hasn't been
clout.
Anything done.
What other director would have the clout to do something like this other than Spielberg or Scorsese or...
Lucas.
Lucas, maybe.
Zemeckis, possibly. I don't know.
Right. But the point is, you know, why wouldn't a studio greenlight this for any other director? Because they know it's not going to make any money. This is not going to make any money.
Guess what? I'll bet there'll be a four-hour director's cut.
Pinch me now. All right. Let's move on. Here's a movie I really liked. It's called Hidden Figures. And this is based on a true story. And it is about three African-American women who were mathematical geniuses who worked for NASA in 1961 and helped the astronauts through their mathematical calculations not only get to the, you know, get into orbit and, you know, and ultimately get to the moon, but because of racial discrimination back then, they received no credit. So the Hidden Figures is kind of a pun because figures is math and, you know, they knew all these equations, these hidden figures that they were able to uncover.
Oh,
and they are hidden figures because, you know, they were behind the scenes. And Taraji P. Henson, who's terrific in this, is
kind of stunning,
you like it with the glasses.
She gets dewy and gorgeous and kind of like
tall. Octavia Spencer is in it, and the third actress is
I don't know.
Monet.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, I'm sorry, but she's going to probably get nominated for an Oscar. I'll come up with her name in a moment. I'm going to look it up. Full disclosure, because I want to.
Neil is doing
due.
Today without notes, by the way.
Yes, wow. Usually I have.
He's
notes.
He's working without a net today, ladies and gentlemen. We're so proud of him.
I know. Isn't
it's like
something?
His bar mitzvah today. He's a man.
There but, you go. All right. It's Janelle Monáe.
Janelle Monáe.
Right. So anyway, so the three of them are working in this kind of office pool doing these calculations.
Mainly in Virginia, we should mention.
In Virginia, yeah.
Right.
And. Taraji P. Henson's character gets promoted, and she's working with all men, all white men, and Kevin Costner is kind of the head of that unit. And there's this great—it's kind of like an Oscar scene. It's terrific where every day she leaves for 40 minutes to use the bathroom, which is on the other side of
the colored bathroom.
Yeah, that's a colored-only sign on it. And after like 2 months of this, you know, Costner.
I need these figures. Where is she?
Well, Yuri Gagarin, the Russian space guy, who's the first guy that goes into orbit, beats the United States. And he goes, Kevin Costner goes, we don't come in second. Call your family. Call your wives. You know, we're going to be working like 18 hours here. You know, you're going to be staying here all night. And she just keeps leaving for like 40 minutes to an hour every day. So he's like, after a month, where the hell are you going every day for 45 minutes?
She takes her work with her, by the way, and uses it.
Right.
You know.
And she goes, I'm going to the bathroom. He goes, well, who the hell spends 45 minutes in the bathroom every day? And she just loses it. And she goes, I'm spending 2 minutes in the bathroom. I'm spending 40 minutes walking a half a mile to the bathroom and walking a half a mile back from the bathroom because, I can't use the white bathroom here, you know?
Mic drop. Right? Bam.
And another thing, you know, well, why can't I use the coffee pot that give me this little dinky coffee pot, you know, why can't I get the...
The guys she works with made a coffee pot for her that said colored only on
right,
the
and that's Jim
pot.
Parsons.
Jim
who
Parsons
we know
is
from
kind
the,
of her nemesis.
From the Big Bang Theory. Who's also playing another genius. This guy's, you know, I like Jim Parsons. It's always like one character. It's always
nerdy genius.
Nerdy genius. So, I think that, you know, it's historic. First of all,
it's a little cliche and a little
Disney-fied. Yeah, it's not an artsy film.
It's a feel-good movie.
Right. It's not an artsy film. It's kind of straight-up narratively, but that's okay. I'm glad that these women are getting their due. You know, it's historically interesting. There's a lot of similarities to The Right Stuff, which is a great Philip Kaufman movie. And you see several scenes that are in The Right Stuff, like Gus Grissom blowing the hatch on the Gemini. On the
The Right Stuff didn't have the three black women.
Right, but I'm saying you're seeing those.
That's what I'm saying. They left it out. Yeah.
Right. So in other words, you're seeing it through the eyes of these African American women, which I think is terrific. It's like, oh yeah, I remember that scene from The Right Stuff. But it's like, you know, they're not even allowed. It's a big honor. They let Taraji P. Henson's character into the room to watch the blast of John Glenn.
And it's suddenly timely because of John Glenn passing away.
Right. Yeah. And John Glenn won't even go into space until he
has zero numbers. He wants
Taraji P. Henson's character's numbers.
Get me the girl.
Right. So I liked it. It's quite good. What did you
think? Yeah, it's a feel good. It's kind of like Racism 101 as far as what we learn historically, but it's a feel good movie. It's fun. The soundtrack is great.
Yeah, it's as much about racism in that time as it is
about the race to the moon.
That's correct. I mean, it really is. I mean, there's a great scene in the beginning that I love, where these three women are on their way to work. They're carpooling together, and a cop pulls them over strictly because of the color of their skin, and he's harassing them. And then she says, "We're going to be late for work. We work for NASA." And he goes, "You guys, you girls work for NASA? Oh my god!" And he turns around. He's like, "Would you like a police escort?"
Yeah, that really happened.
But it was.
I like a shot of Octavia.
That's America's
Spencer
best that you work.
I like Octavia Spencer underneath the car trying to work on it.
Yeah,
messing with the starter.
And apparently you can bypass a starter and start a car, which I'd never heard of.
And Janelle Monáe is like also she's like they won't even let her get promoted. They change the rules, so she has to go to court to
She wants to get an engineering degree, and she can't go to night school because it's
white-only school.
So she challenges it in court. And her speech to the judge is a little pat about being the first guy.
It is
but I'm,
I
like the movie.
Good.
I like the movie. It's good for white guilt.
All right. Did you see Fences, Bill Bergoglio?
Yes, I did.
Why don't you tell us about it?
This is based on
August Wilson's
play about a garbage man who is a family man, but in his past, you find out that he was once a very promising baseball player. Unfortunately, he came up too quickly before
integration.
Yeah, he was in the Negro Leagues
played in the Negro Leagues. He didn't get to play like Jackie Robinson with the white players.
I'm better than Jackie Robinson. I know 100 players that are better than Jackie Robinson.
So he harbors a grudge, and that grudge carries him through the rest of his life when it comes to his relationship with his sons and his relationship with his wife.
Viola Davis.
Yeah, she's great. They both have won Tonys, I think. They've played these roles before. Denzel is directing, we should mention. He's done it a couple of times before, but he really makes this an actor's movie. I mean, obviously, it was a stage play, and it feels a little stagey because you're confined to this house mostly, although we go to the backyard, we go to the front yard.
Yeah. Wow.
We go a couple of the plays. Yeah, no. I this was in my top 10 list.
It's I think cinematography. I don't know. There was a woman DP on it, and she was incredible. It felt like every shot in this could be a really gorgeous looking still, and I love the sets.
Denzel swings for the fences and hits it, as far as I'm concerned. Right. And
32 years ago, I saw the original play with James Earl Jones on Broadway, and he had a very different interpretation of the role that Denzel
plays. I saw Billy
Dee
Williams do it, actually.
And I liked. It was an amazing performance by James Earl Jones. I think Denzel has a different interpretation. He's kind of an angrier take on the character, but it's still a powerhouse of a performance. I think it is rather stagey. I think it works better on a stage than it does in a movie. It needed to be opened up more. The opening shot is he's a trash collector, and he's not allowed. He goes, only the white people could drive the garbage truck. You know, they only let the black people pick up the garbage, you know. And, you know, you see him on his route in the beginning. And I think if they opened it up more with more scenes like that were not in the play, I mean, it's kind of like a filming of the play. And Denzel did this on Broadway. He did not direct the Broadway show, to my knowledge, with Viola Davis. So he brought much of the original cast, not the original cast, the cast that he did in the revival cast, to this movie. But even the fact that I think it's a little stagey and confined, I think that the performances are so amazing. And the dialogue, the August Wilson dialogue, is so great. And the combination of Denzel delivering these lines.
Well, think of other
Viola Davis delivering these lines.
Think of other plays that they've made into movies.
It's great.
But I think it's better than a lot of plays that are shot for the screen.
Okay, here's
Venus's Fur. I think this is better than that.
Okay, well, Venus's Fur is
well,
terrible.
Well, no, that's cool.
Okay, so here's a play a movie that I actually like better than the play. I think The Sunshine Boys is a better movie. I saw the original play with Sam Waterston. Not Sam Waterston. I forgot the two
Art
actors.
Art Carney and
No, that's The Odd Couple. Jack Albertson and somebody else. Anyway, but we know the movie with George Burns and Walter Matthau. So you still had those sets in Walter Matthau's apartment, but you know Walter Matthau's out on the street. I don't know. They opened it up more.
Whenever you can shoot more scenes that aren't in a stage situation, it's going to look better.
Well, Anyway,
I think this is very successful.
I like Fences. I think it's very good.
In your top 10 list?
I don't think it's in my top
20?
10. Yeah, it'd probably be my top 20. It's quite good. The acting is extraordinary. And as I said, when you see the marriage of the playwright's lines with great actors delivering them, that's what really makes it for me. And the
Oscars could give him Best Director. He's very popular, and this
is
quite a...
Damien Chazelle for La La Land will get Best Director. That's the kind of movie they like with the color palette and that.
All right, so we like that. What else we got?
Anyway, I also like the fact that, which you didn't mention, was that his son, is getting might get a football scholarship, but because that Denzel's character... is so tainted because of his experience in the world of sports that he goes out of his way to sabotage and discourage and ultimately sabotage his son's football thing for no good reason, or in his mind it's a very good reason. But, this character is a very adamant character. He's the patriarch and nobody can disagree with him. As you said, it ruins his relationship. I like the film. All right, Patterson, take it away, Bill McCuddy.
Well, this is about a bus driver played by Adam Driver. Again, we're back with Adam Driver, fresh from his Silence triumph. This is, I think, made before. Jim Jarmusch is the director, and this is one of those Zen movies that people either love or hate. I'm not in the love category on this thing because basically it's about a New Jersey bus driver who writes poetry and drives around, is married to a hot chick, and that's the whole movie. I mean, there's no beginning, middle, or end to this thing. People are loving this thing. It's on some top 10 lists. It's not on mine. I was bored to tears.
I watched
Get Me Off the Bus
and gave up on it after about half an hour.
Yeah,
I really did. I can't watch this. And
well, what a movie. I don't know what you guys saw. No, I hated this movie. It was terrible. No, actually, here's the thing, okay? I mean, I happen to really like Jim Jarmusch. I like his sensibility and his deadpan humor. I thought Stranger Than Paradise and Down by Law and Night on Earth, I like that slow-paced, vibe that Jarmusch does. And every once in a while, there's deadpan humor thrown in those movies that I just mentioned. I mean, Roberto Benigni is very funny in Down by Law, and he's also funny in Night on Earth. And even Stranger Than Paradise, Benigni is not in that. I mean, there is some subtle, really dry humor in there that's funny that kind of
takes up. So how do you explain this? This is like an experiment did?
There is a couple of funny moments in that you see that trademark Jarmusch thing stuff in there. For example... He's a bus driver in Patterson, his name is Patterson, and he lives in Patterson, New Jersey, and he's driving.
Oh, that's side-splittingly hilarious.
No. Every once in a while, when he finishes his route, there's another bus driver who just complains about his health and complains about his family and complains about his day. That's mildly amusing. There's another funny segment with not so much a segment, his interaction with a bartender. He goes and gets a beer every day after his thing, but it's so long to get to these moments that it's really not worth it. And there's a whole thing with his wife where she buys a guitar and she wants to take guitar lessons, and she fixes him this terrible pie with Brussels sprouts and cheddar cheese, and he's obviously in love with her, and she's like, oh, this is delicious, honey. But please don't think that I'm endorsing this as a comedy. I'm just saying that there are a couple of funny moments, but you have to wait like 25 minutes to get to like one little funny moment. He's also a poet, and he writes poems about mundane things like
matches.
Blue
diamond.
Yeah, I like these blue diamond matches that we have. We used to have these other matches, and now we have these matches. I don't think these poems are based on a famous playwright, a famous poet, and I don't think they're particularly good. Although we could,
his family should sue for defamation of character.
I don't know. I was pretty bored with the film, and
yeah,
I think that Jarmusch people might find things to savor in it, but this is certainly not, if you're a Jarmusch fan, his best on any means at all. All right. So what else we want to talk about?
Well, when next we see you, I already have done mine. You're putting your top 10 list together. So we're starting to think about what the best performances and worst performances of the year are. And we have a couple of crossovers. I won't say what they are, but we have a couple of things we agree on. We don't agree on the best picture of the year, but...
What's your best picture of the year, Bill?
My best picture is a little thing called Lion.
I loved Lion. What do you think of Lion?
I like Lion.
Godot!
It's cute.
If he were waiting for Godot. Godot!
But I like the first half of it better than the second half. But that's the way it is. But
what about the last 5 minutes?
Last 5 minutes? Very good.
Maybe the best 5 minutes, last 5 minutes in a movie since Whiplash.
Well, not since Rogue One.
Or La La La. Yeah, or Rogue One.
What are we
going to do about Rogue One? I mean, it's so many people love this movie, and I just think it's sort of ordinary. And the thing we talked
about it last week.
But we didn't talk about the...
Made $300 million domestically at the box office this week. Yeah. I've talked to a lot of Star Wars aficionados who really like the movie. You know, I think if you're a Star Wars big fan, I think that, you know, it will satisfy you. I agree with you, Bill McCuddy, that it does get confusing at some parts if you don't know. Like, I love your line about the two spaceships.
Yeah, they're playing bumper car, and I have no idea which one is which.
Right. The only way I was clued in was because the audience was cheering when the spaceship on the left crashed into the one on the right and kind of hurt the one on the right. I'm going, I guess the spaceship on the left is the good guy spaceship, is the rebellion spaceship. But that said, you know, look, I don't hate the movie. I think it's a good movie. I just they have digital recreations in this that are really cool.
One actor who has died, and you know, and now all actors are like, uh-oh.
You're talking about Peter Cushing.
Peter Cushing, yeah, absolutely.
And right. So the point is that yes, that's a technical. I read an article about that. That they've upped the game. I mean, that all these years of special effects, they've been working towards this, and now they can bring back dead actors from any era and build movies around them if they can get the rights from the estates. So you might see a new James Cagney film coming out soon. Mm. You know, because you put motion capture sensors on somebody that looks like James Cagney, and then the computer could kind of make it look exactly like you. But in the case of Peter Cushing, I understand that they could make somebody look exactly like they did a look-alike. They put motion capture sensors on them. They ran it through a computer. It looks exactly like Peter Cushing. But now what I want to know is the voice. Did they get somebody imitate
the
voice?
They got an actor who was in the Harry Potter movies.
Huh?
Okay.
Who does a damn good Peter Cushing.
Peter Cushing. Yeah.
So if you do recreate a movie, if you do a new movie and you recreate James Cagney and it looks exactly like James Cagney circa, you know, White Heat era.
You still need a performance. And
not ragtime.
You need somebody to say like, top of the world, you know, something like that.
Yeah, but you could end up with somebody who's some of those. I'm trying to think of the people who used to do impressions of him back in the old days. But
like a
Rich Little. That's what you could
end up. Do you remember
with.
This commercial that they had? And I think the estate of Fred Astaire.
Yeah, dancing with the mop.
He's dancing with a Hoover vacuum or some kind of vacuum cleaner or something like that. And
there's a lovely tribute to a dead artist, huh?
Right. So. I mean, that was – what did they just take a scene from a movie and just they CGI'd out whatever – I think he was
top
dancing
hat.
With a broom.
It was his real performance.
Right, and they put in – they colorized it or something. They put in the vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, instead of a broom or whatever it was.
Yeah,
it was
right, okay. So this is a whole new world that we're going into where we're going to see – yeah, let's do a sequel to this. Well, this actor isn't around. That's all right. We'll just
You think 60 years from now Spectrum cable network will have a digitally recreated Neil Rosen.
I don't think they're going to spend their money
on
that.
Hope.
But Bill McCuddy and Bill Vigoli—that's a whole other thing.
Hey, speaking of special effects, let's wrap it up with
what's your special favorite movie of the year, Bill Vigoli?
Zootopia.
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 Zootopia. Go ahead, laugh. No. For me, it was one of the most relevant movies of the year and fun to watch. And
I'm going with Manchester by the Sea. I think that it's a very weak year of movies.
I disagree. I think we had a nice quality spurt at the end of the year.
This would not be my favorite movie of the year. There's no movie this year like Brooklyn, which touched my heart last year, or Spotlight. but I think Manchester by the Sea is a really incredibly acted, by Kenneth Lonergan, written and directed movie. Casey Affleck, who I'm not a big fan of,
gut-wrenchingly
does a tremendous
real
performance. Michelle Williams gives an Oscar-worthy performance in one particular scene for Best Supporting
Actress.
She'll
probably win.
Kyle Chandler's great.
No, Octavia Spencer will beat her.
And the kid, whose name escapes me,
Lucas,
who plays the nephew, is terrific. He's the comic relief in the movie. Not that he's really funny, but at least he takes a very downer of a film. Yeah. And you know, he's trying to.
Manchester in your top 10, Billy?
Yeah, absolutely.
And mine too.
And there's, you finally find out, you know, I'm not going to give it away. There's a twist. Is like, why is Casey Affleck such a prick and so down in this movie? And you find that out as you go along, and then you're going, oh, my God.
I mean, you have to pay attention to it. I think we should tell people who haven't seen it yet. Pay strict attention because it jumps around time-wise.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes.
And
more
they don't
so.
Do anything
I
obvious.
I don't think it's confusing.
No, but you have to. But the second half doesn't do the same thing that the first half does in terms of the time jumping.
All right. What's your worst movie of the year?
I think I saw it last night. Called Why Him?
Oh, really? The James Franco, Bryan Cranston movie?
Oh, man.
Does Cranston get away clean, or is he?
No, he's just as guilty as everybody else in this movie.
What
Megan
a shame.
Mullally,
I like
feel
him.
Bad for her twerking on the bed with Bryan Cranston. Right.
What's the movie with Daniel Radcliffe where he's a dead corpse who's constantly
Swiss Army
farting?
Man. Yeah.
All right,
Swiss
I
Army Man.
I might go with that one.
Yeah.
You know, and the guy from the Beach Boys movie. Is
Paul Dano.
Paul Dano finds him washed up on a beach, and he uses his farting as a human jet ski.
It's the only gas-powered movie of the year. It's so the EPA is happy about it.
Here's a movie you liked, Bill, that I hated, Chasing Niagara. Here's a movie where the entire movie builds up to the fact that these guys are going to raft – Do whitewater rafting over Niagara Falls, and I watched the entire the whole setup, the whole plans. They draw the whole thing up, and then they get to the falls at the end, and they go,
that's what made it real.
Nah,
come on,
so.
No, that's what made
so.
It real, and everything that it looks like a
I'm
Red Bull commercial.
I'm watching this for 90 minutes. It's like, okay, we got to Niagara Falls. It was a cold morning, and then I looked at the flight.
Daring decision that they made as filmmakers.
Sucked. It just sucked.
It wasn't my best movie of the year, but it wasn't my worst. Knight of Cups was one of my worst with Terrence Malick behind the camera. And Sea of Trees was the other one with Gus Van Sant behind. About a Japanese garden where people go to commit suicide. I wanted to go there halfway through the movie.
Life on the Line is pretty awful.
Hey, listen,
John
we
Travolta.
Had one kind of newsy thing happen this week. Did you guys see Passengers?
So culture.
Anybody see Passengers?
I have not seen Passengers.
There's a big, big, big moral problem with this movie that people
you
are—
saw it?
That people are really complaining. I can't because it's a complete spoiler. But when that gets reported more widely, or when the movie just is opening this week, we don't have any of the numbers yet, so we'll see. But we'll talk about it next week because it's going to be a big, big hot button issue. People are really, really outraged about this one turn.
Jack Goes Home, the Rory Culkin film, would also be on my 10 worst list. But there's a lot of good movies out there. I think Colonia, which you could see on demand, that would be on my list.
Horrible.
I really
don't
like
do
that.
No.
Lion, I would put certainly as your
Gadoo!
Favorite movie. I would put that on my list. There are some very, very good movies, and we'll talk about them.
We'll do a year-ender in a couple of weeks, and we'll
talk
about
back
that.
And we see everything. In the meantime, I really sincerely want to wish everybody a happy holiday, and thanks for sitting around talking movies with us for the year. And as I say, if you are joining us for the first time, this is sort of an after show to a TV show that we do every week on New York One and nationally on some outlets it's Time Warner Cable, some outlets it's Spectrum. Talking Pictures on Demand. And, we're here every week. And
Spectrum sounds like a Bond villain, doesn't it? It sounds like, yes, Mr. Bond, I'm going to kill you, but first I want to offer you a triple bundle package with the best internet, telephone, and home.
And as Bill McCuddy says, each week, what do we do on the show, Bill?
Well, we try and be subjective. we watch the bad movies so you don't have
Indeed
to.
Indeed we do. And so for Bill Bregoli, who
I have no
only,
tagline.
Who not only, since this is our holiday show.
If Bill had one, it would be creepy.
Since Bill is also, our critic here, Bill is also engineers and does all the sound and edits the film.
Yeah, let's give
show.
Him a round of applause.
And thank you, Bill, for your another year of great service and doing this for us. And thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. And we're off next week, but we'll be back the following week with 10 best and more theatrical blockbuster movies that we can tell you whether you should see or not. And we'll listen to you next time on Sitting Around Talking Movies.